You are listening to the cycling podcast preview of the men's race at Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, brought to you by Sports Tours International. Now, if watching Omloop over the weekend whets your appetite and makes you think that a trip to Flanders to watch the racing is an unmissable trip of a lifetime, well, you won't be wrong. But Sports Tours can take you right to the heart of the action at the Tour of Flanders in early April. You can ride the Sportive and then watch the race the following day with a three-night trip to Ghent. You'll stay in a hotel that I know very well in the cathedral area of the city, a perfect location for your weekend break. You'll get to ride the Sportive. Sports Tours International will help you regardless of the distance that you choose to ride. So you could ride the full 260 kilometres if you feel tough enough. You'll get a Sports Tours International jersey, a We Ride Flanders Gobix windstopper, which might come in handy if the weather's a bit chilly. There's bike storage at the hotel. You'll get first-class backup from Sports Tours International's sports directors, masseur. I'm not sure about masseurs, actually, but certainly sort of you'll get backup and support all weekend, transport to the Sportive, and then you'll get a brilliant view of the race on the Sunday. There's also a Tour of Flanders VIP trip if you just fancy watching the pro race, and there's hospitality options as well. Similar packages available for Paris-Roubaix the following weekend. So check out sportstoursinternational.co.uk and treat yourself to a trip to the heart of the cycling spring classics. Now it's on with the show. This is Lionel Burney. I'm here in the London sunshine with Rob Hatch. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Lionel.
And you just heard a bit of atmosphere from a past edition of Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, recorded by me out on the course some years ago. The crowd segueing into a bit of Happy Days, the theme tune from the American sitcom. You see absolutely everything out there in Belgium at this time of year. Everyone dresses up. There's a real party atmosphere. The students head out of Ghent to go and watch the race as well. And it's a bike race like no other, really, Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. And I think that whets our appetite for the race to come tomorrow, or the races to come tomorrow, because, of course, there's a men's race followed by the women's race. Rob, I don't know whether you noticed there's been a subtle rebranding of Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. They've dropped the Het, so it's just Omloop Nieuwsblad now.
Apparently so, though for me it's the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. For a lot of people of different generations, it's the Omloop Het Volk as well. I did notice that in the branding. Maybe it's to do with the newspaper itself, because Het Nieuwsblad is the Nieuwsblad, and they've just dropped the. So
they have.
There you go.
They have. I mean, it won't change anything about the race tomorrow. Maybe we'll have a little bit of a history lesson about Omloop in the second part of this episode. But we're going to focus on the men's race now, and I think the big storyline is whether Team Visma Lisa Bike can make it four in a row, because the past three editions have been won by their riders. We've had Wout van Aert, Dylan van Baarle, of course, currently injured, and then last year, Jan Tratnik, who kind of, well, he came off the wheel of Niels Pollitt, didn't he?
Yes.
Got a lovely armchair ride to the finish behind a nice big rider. This year, Team Visma Lisa Bike, they have a very strong lineup, of course, with van Aert, the home rider from Ghent, Thijs Benoot, Victor Campenaerts, and then Daniel's tip in our regular episode this week, Matteo Jorgensen, the American rider.
Straight down from Mount Tabor.
Absolutely. Perfect training for the cobblestones and the bergs. This week in Belgium, it's been a bit wet, so the recon rides have been in pretty gritty conditions. It's supposed to be cold but dry tomorrow, Saturday, for the races. But how do you see the men's race panning out? Because for me, it's always this kind of interesting battle between riders who want a small group sprint, riders who might hope for a big group sprint, as we saw a few years ago with Davide Ballerini. I mean, that's a real outlier, that, when that big group came to the finish. And then the riders who really want to break it up and get away using the Mur in Herrasbergen and the Bosberg as their springboard for victory for what is quite a tricky run into the finish. It doesn't suit every rider, that run in, so it becomes quite a tactical battle. But what are you anticipating, Rob?
I'm anticipating a hard race with all the big names there. It's not just about the Mur, is it? Because there's a lot happening before that. You go to the Haarhoek, which is a really big feature of this race, then Leeberg, and then you've got that sequence of bergs. And it's a real beautiful start to the Cobble Classic season, because it's straight away, you're thrown in the deep end, aren't you? It's what it's all about. Those last sort of 70 kilometres or so, even more actually, last 100 k's, you get into the last 100 k's, you get into the hill zone, as they call it, over there, and it really doesn't stop. And teams like Visma Liseberg, with all these different options, they're going to try and make it as hard as they can, you know. And that's not the only strong team going. I'm looking down at Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. They've been riding. You've got Alpecin, who, I think, unless I've missed a race, they're still looking for their first victory of the season. People like Jasper Philipsen looking to try and get off the mark. There won't be, by the way, Binyam Girmay. He was meant to ride, but he's gone back to Eritrea because his partner's given birth to their second child. So he's not racing. He will come back for the rest of the Flemish Spring. So he's missing. So Andermatt might be at a bit of a loose end, but who knows? The great thing about this race is it's often unpredictable, not just because it's a Cobble Classic, but it's the first one. It's what they call the openings weekend over there.
It is. Well, we've kind of forced that phrase, opening weekend, on them, haven't we, the English
speaking
world.
But they leave the S in. That's the funny thing about it. That's why you've got to sort of do it with the accent. They love it.
I think what I love about it most is the fact that we've got a little bit to go on, but not too much to go on. There are hints here and there from the races we've seen so far. You know, Wout van Aert looked reasonably good in Algarve, for example. But there's always a little bit of a surprise. I think this balance between people who want a sprint of some kind and riders who will want to try and break that elastic is always the most fascinating thing about that kind of middle third of the race, or the second half of the middle third, if I can put it that way. The rider that I think everyone will want to shake off, Rob, will be Jasper Philipsen. You mentioned Alpecin de Koenig.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a lot of people tipping him to figure, but the race has to fall a certain way for him to really be in with a chance. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be easy to shake off on the climbs, but there's enough climbs to make it difficult for the real sprinters.
And it's not just the cobble climbs, is it? Think about the Berendries. That is a horrible hill. Straight up, you can see what's coming, and it just goes up and up and up. Once you pass Frederik Backert's farm down at the bottom there, you've got that wall of fans either side. And I can already visualise a team like Visma Liseberg getting to the front there and making it difficult on that climb, if it isn't already difficult, because, you know, before you even get there, you've got another passage of Haarhoek and Leeberg. You've got the Molenberg. It's almost like springs really here once you go up the Molenberg.
And what about last year's winner, the defending champion, Jan Tratnik, now with Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, of course. And it's going to be one of those races, again, I think, where the team with the might, the numbers, Visma Liseberg, all of the pressure will be on them to control and to make the race, shape the race, get the right moves going. And that means we could see stuff happening really quite a long way out. You know, that big circuit where they go over the Leeberg and Haarhoek cobbles in three times in relatively quick succession, that's what's going to shape the race, isn't it? And the old Tour of Flanders finish over the Mur in Herrasbergen, and then the Bosberg, and then the run into Ninove, that's kind of where whoever's left surviving fights it out amongst themselves, don't they?
Certainly is. I'm just looking down at the start list again, and we'd be here all day talking about names. They jump out, and that's why this is such a great race. It leaves it really, really open. One thing I will mention, and we mention it every year because it goes on year after year after year. Do you really want to win the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad? Because if you're a big name rider like Wout van Aert, and of course I'm saying this very tongue in cheek, please don't people shout at us saying, of course he wants to win, because we know they want to win. But record sequences are there to be broken. However, never in the history of the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad has the winner of the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad gone on to win the Tour of Flanders, the Ronde van Vlaanderen, in the same season.
I mean, that's an incredible one, isn't it? Because I can remember talking about that 10, 15 years ago. It was almost like the curse of Omloop, but it still holds. And yeah, it's an interesting one, that. But I think Wout van Aert will want to
win. Yeah.
They will want to win one way or the other. But perhaps it is it's one of those days where, you know, Matteo Jorgensen might be the number one rider, with Van Aert as the kind of the very dangerous floater, the one that everyone will instinctively want to watch. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Soudal Quickstep, because this is their big opening to the season. And I have to say, it looks a little bit of a lightweight list there. I mean, Yves Lampaert is a bona fide classics rider with some big wins in the past, but, you know,
Two Dwars of Flanders, which is his home race.
Yeah, but kind of gone the other side of 30 now, hasn't he? Paul Manier really interests me.
He's
young
man,
rider. But again, you know, this is a bit of a step up from the races that he's won before. Kasper Pedersen is a talent, but again, you know, when you look at some of the leaders from the other teams, I'm thinking Matej Mohoric of Bahrain, victorious, Dylan Turns even of Cofidis, Kasper Asgreen making his cobbled classic debut for EF Education Easy Post.
They've got a really strong team, actually, a really strong team. It's not just about him there. You look down, like, I'm intrigued to see how Albanese gets on this terrain. Dole works hard. You've got Honoré, who's been in that Quick-Step team before, and he knows exactly how to win a race. And Marijn van den Berg, plus a former winner in Michael Valgren.
Well, Valgren won that freezing cold edition, didn't he? I think in 2018. It was absolutely bitterly cold.
The only one I have ever missed commommentating, believe it or not.
What, since 1945?
Yes.
You don't look old enough, Rob.
The start of... I actually watched that in a bar in South Korea at the Olympic Games. At about midnight in a pop-up Indian restaurant that all the broadcasters have flocked to in the skiing Olympic Village.
Wow, what an image. I'm going to just throw in a few more names here because it's a tricky one, because you can go through the list and see potential
Lidl
winners
Trek.
Everywhere, can't you? I mean, Jasper Stuyven and Edward Turns. Turns, another rider from Ghent. They're riding for Lidl Trek. Who else are we anticipating? Stefan Kung, very decent cobbled classics rider for Groupama FDJ. And I'm going to mention again my hunch that I think Tom Pidcock, Q36.5 Pro Cycling, I think he's going to be very good this weekend. And I thought that, you know, he had his two wins, didn't he, in the desert. So he started the season fast with his new team. It's obviously really important for them to get a big, big win as early as they possibly can. And the thing that just convinces me is that he was talking down his chances and saying that the course doesn't suit him this week.
Ah, of course it does. Of course it does.
I see what he means, though, because I made this point in the regular episode this week that he'll need to be in the right sort of group from the Muir, you know, whether it's with another rider, a bit like we saw Tratnik took advantage of the fact that Niels Pollitt's a big, strong, powerful rider. Kind of gave him a toe to the finish, didn't he? Pidcock's in, you know, he's a lightweight rider. It's quite a long way. And I think he'll need to be in a little group with some stronger guys just to keep a group away. I mean, that's the way I would think is represents his best chance. Because if he comes in a big group, he might get muscled out in the sprint. And I don't think he can do it solo. I could be proved wrong, but I think he needs to be in just that right combination of riders right at the end.
Oh, we saw in Andalusia again, he wins well from small groups, doesn't he? Winning there yet again. And you open the paper tomorrow, Nieuwsblad. He will be there in the sport world section, you know, with a big, big sports section right in the middle of the paper. There's going to be like 10, 15 pages tomorrow on the Omloppet Nieuwsblad. And he will be next to the stars. And he will be in the first few lines. I'm not sure he'll be a 5-star. But he will be a 4-star, I'm pretty sure. He'll be right up there amongst the favourites. And again, we can't really talk about the favourites without mentioning Arnaud Dully, of course, from the other side of Belgium, but very much a big, big fans' favourite over there, the Bull, as they call him now. And any race that UAE Team Emirates enter, they're always candidates to win. And we know it's been going well for them in Jonathan Narváez early on this season. Add in Florian Vermeers, the new signing, Tim Wellens, the likes of Hedegaards, Biel, Morgado. What was it, the youngest top 5 finisher in the Tour of Flanders for God knows how many years last year? And Niels Pollitt himself.
I mean, we're in danger of naming half
the peloton. Let's just read
the
start list, shall we?
which is always a pitfall when previewing these big races, especially, as I said, when we've got a little bit of info to go on, but a lot of anticipation to whet the appetite.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food. And before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
That was another bit of atmospheric crowd noise recorded in Ghent a few years ago, quite a long time ago now. The crowd were chanting for Thijs Benoot, the son of Ghent. He had just finished third in his second edition of Omloop back in 2016. Feels like just yesterday that I stood in the centre of Ghent at the finish of the 2016 edition of the race. He'd finished third behind Greg Van Avermaet and Peter Sagan, which indicates how long ago that actually was. And I think at the time he was still studying at the university in Ghent. He was only 21 years old back then, considered a young, precocious rider. But cycling changed a lot since then, because now we've got teenagers riding the race. In fact, one of his Visma Elisa bike teammates is a British rider, Matt Brennan, who's still only 19. He was second last month in his first World Tour race, the opening stage of the Tour Down Under, and he lines up in a very, very strong Visma Elisa bike team. Now, I said I was going to do a very brief history lesson here, Rob, because this year marks the 80th anniversary of the first edition of Omloop. It was first held in March 1945. Now, that was actually about 6 weeks or so before the end of the Second World War in Europe. So the race was founded technically during wartime, and it was founded by the newspaper Het Volk. They called it Omloop van Vlaanderen. Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders, objected. That race was organised by Het Nieuwsblad, the rival newspaper, and they said that, look, Omloop and Ronde, their names are too similar. They both kind of mean tour or loop. And so after a couple of editions, I think Omloop van Vlaanderen became Omloop Het Volk after the newspaper. And it stayed that way until 2009, when the two newspapers merged and it became Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. Until that point, really, it had been a very, very parochial affair, almost exclusively won by Belgians. I think 53 of the first 61 races were won by Belgian riders. It's much more international these days. And then along came the women's race in 2006. So this year will be the 20th edition of that. Now, there might be people listening who are heading over to Belgium to watch the racing, and maybe they've got a very clear plan of what they're going to do. But the finish, now that it's down in Ninove, kind of gives us that old Tour of Flanders run in. But when I look at the route, I mean, back in the day, I would have gone to the Molenberg and then sort of tried to make it to the finish, because the Molenberg's a lovely little climb. It used to be the first or the second climb in the race. It's a bit later on now, but the obvious place to head to really now is the Lieberg, because they go over three times in the men's race, once in the women's race. You've got the Haghoek cobbles, which are walking distance from the climb as well. So you can kind of switch between the two and get a real flavour of what Omloop is all about. Alternatively, just head to Hedarsbergen and the Muir, because that's a real grandstand finish, and it's possibly where the winning move might happen, isn't it?
I think it could well happen, and it's always a big focal point for the race and the season. And I think the teams also, obviously it's not in their plan to put on that show that everyone's going to be together at that point, but everybody wants to hang on to that point, and then it kicks off again, doesn't it? Because you've got that first image of everybody going up there, and that's what's on the highlights reels. They're going to be the photographs in the very nice posh magazines that have got all this wonderful photography in, and that's one of the images of spring, isn't it? The peloton climbing the Muur van Gerardsbergen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you get those kind of iconic pictures there, don't you? Because they go round the bend with the cobblestones and the crowd. You know, the crowd that kind of gather on that kind of corner where there's always a great photograph of the rider going past, they almost know that they're part of the show as well, don't they? So they're really cheering on the riders. And then, of course, they go past the Citadel at the top, one of the most iconic stretches of road in cycling, not just because it looks so spectacular, but because that is the point where the race is really on. No one is looking back from that. When you get to that false flat at the top of the Muir, knowing that it's real kind of, you know, it's fast but quite grippy roads from there to the Bosberg. And ridden in isolation, the Bosberg is absolutely nothing. I mean, it's dead straight, what, 300 metres of cobbles. You kind of transition from the concrete road, the relative smooth of the concrete road, onto the cobbles with a bit of a bump, and you can see the top before you've even reached the cobblestones. It should be nothing, and yet it can also be the place where the legs start to go and the elastic starts to snap. And then I feel like, and this is what the Belgian commentators are so good at on TV, there's almost this pause for breath once they get to the top of the Bosberg, and it's like, right, where are we? What have we got now? And then there's that, it's interminable distance from the top of there to the finish line in Hinove. Really difficult roads to ride on, whether you're an amateur or a pro. And again, it's one of those deceptive things in bike racing. It looks like nothing's happening, but everything is happening.
It's funny you mentioned the commentary. I was watching one of the old clips the other day, the famous Stannard 1 versus 3. I was in the cabin next door, so I didn't hear it live, obviously, but I went back, and I often go back and watch the Flemish Sporza coverage. My Dutch is very, very poor. I'll understand the odd, you know, cycling word, and I can just about get through an article to do some research. But I love the cadence of it, and it's the sound of spring to me, going over there and hearing that. And it is, with this other finish, it's like going back and watching an old Ronde van Vlaanderen, because they're on the way to Ninove. They've got that, like you said, the intake of breath after the Bosberg. Who's there? Who's around? And how do we win this race? That's the next thing. And I can imagine, you know, 90-odd% chance maybe it's going to play out like that. We don't know in modern bike racing, do we? But there is a good chance, unless, I mean, Pogacar's not there, is he? So there's, you know.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, as Spring Classic goes, it's one of the shorter ones, isn't it? It's sort of the 200-kilometre mark rather than the 260. That in itself changes the dynamic of the race, doesn't it? Because it does make it a bit more intense. Perhaps it reduces the chance of one of those ridiculous 50-60-kilometre moves, but you just never know.
No.
You just never know. So, I mean, that's what it's all about this time of year, isn't it? The anticipation and the excitement. Rob, you've been over to Ghent many times for Omloop, I guess, but certainly for the Tour of Flanders. Have you got any kind of outstanding memories from the recent past of being over there?
Yes. I think it was the first Omloop at Nieuwsblad I commentated. Luca Paolini winning in a freezing St. Peter's Square at carnival time, like it is now. So it will be packed, actually, because the finish is no longer there and the start is just down the road at the Citadel Park, the SMAC, and what's it called?
The track.
The SMAC is a museum, by the way. It's Kupke is the track where they have the presentation. And it's all on the same sort of place in the Citadel Park in Ghent. But yeah, so the square itself will be full of probably university students coming back at silly o'clock in the morning with strange fair rides around for carnival there as well, the kermes, as they call it. But I remember that day, it was about -9, something silly. It was freezing and the heater stopped working in the commentary box. I was commentating on my own for what we call the world feed, so the international broadcast. I think I was being broadcast in Australia, US, South Africa. So I wasn't working for Warner Brothers Discovery, Eurosport as it was back then. And I just remember trying to stay warm for the whole place. Paolini winning, great finish. Maybe, what was there, 2 or 3 to the finish at that point? Fletcher won a year or two before as well. That was Team Sky's first ever win, wasn't it? So, yeah, my first memory of the Omloop at Nieuwsblad was just trying to stay warm. It was freezing, but just being overawed by the fervour around there. And on those finishes in St. Peter's Plain, in the St. Peter's Square, I always loved, after the race, walking around the bus park, and you'd see fans outside, particularly what was the Quickstep bus, now Sudal Quickstep bus. And you'd have, if it hadn't gone right, you'd have sort of the inquest already. Yeah. And it's like the end of a football match where, you know, you've lost and you've got beat and everyone's waiting to speak to the manager and Lefebvre is hanging around the bus, you know. He's more than going to pop his head outside and things like that. And that's exactly what happened on the day when Stannard did the Stannard and he won against the 3. Of course, he won it 2 years in a row, didn't he? The only British winner of the men's race ever. But I remember that particular day, and yes, it was a sunny day in the end in St. Peter's Square, and that face like thunder. The angry Sir Alex, he'd have been giving the hairdryer treatment on the Quickstep bus.
Yeah, my memories briefly. I mean, my first race there was 1999. Not as a rider, obviously. Not as a rider.
When did you finish?
It was a real baptism of fire, really. I mean, I learned so much about Belgium in just that one day. The fact that men seem to have license to go for a wee absolutely anywhere. The fans just darting off the side of the road for a wee. people drinking the beers, and I guess it was a totally different side of cycling to what I'd seen at the Tour de France. It feels like a different sport, and it feels like, well, I was going to say Christmas Day, you know, today does feel a bit like Christmas Eve, I guess, before the big race. I remember going over in 2004 when the snow led to the race being cancelled on the day. They couldn't ride. That was a bit disappointing. I remember the two Philippe Gilbert wins. You know, one when he was the coming man. He was going to be the next big sensation. This was, we're talking 2006, and then he won again in 2008. But I suppose what I take away most from Omloop Nieuwsblad is the fact that when I first covered it, it was Omloop Het Volk still, and it went from Ghent to Lokeren, which is over towards the east. And since then, it's moved back. The finish has been in Ghent, finished on the same road that the 2007 Tour de France had a stage finish, where Gert Steegman's won, which is right next to the Citadel Park.
Yeah, just up the hill.
Van
Avermaet and Sagan won a couple up there, didn't they?
Yeah, and they came from the other direction. Mm. I mean, it's really incredible. You can stand in the middle of that park and just think of the cycling history that's all gone on around you. And of course, just behind you, you've got the six-day track, you know, where that's the sort of the winter Christmas of Belgian cycling. And yeah, the two Stannard wins, I always just remember, as I mentioned in the regular episode, Richard being brave enough to approach Lefebvre at the start of Kerner Brussels Kerner the next day to ask his reaction after the Etix Quickstep trio got outwitted and outfought by Ian Stannard. I suppose my other thought is that, Wout van Aert aside, the winners in the last 20, 25 years have tended to be that kind of bottom half of the Premier Division Classics riders, rather than the real, you know, where there's no Matthew van der Poel, for example.
Just Dondell Peter Sagan, that.
Well, Peter Sagan never won it.
Did he not?
He never won.
He was beaten by Greg van Avermaet. He was beaten by van Avermaet, you're right.
Not once, but twice.
Deary me. He was beaten by van Avermaet. Right, tell you what, I need to do my homework before tomorrow. I mean, I've got all these notes here. I should look at them, shouldn't I, before opening my mouth? I remember, I have a distinct memory of him in that World Champions jersey, but yeah, he was beaten by van Avermaet. And I think, did van Avermaet win 2 years in a row as well?
He did, two years
out of three?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, you've got the kind of the Stibar, Sturven, Van Baarle.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously Van Baarle's won bigger races too, but it's a real, it is the order for the Spring Classics. And well, I'm very excited. We should also, before we wrap up, mention the women's race, because as I say, it's the 20th edition. Now, the most interesting thing for me here is that last year's winner and runner-up, Marianne Vos and Lotta Kopecky, are both delaying the start of their season until Milan-San Remo later in March.
And a brand new race, isn't it?
A brand new race, of course, yeah. And I think that means, surely, Demi Vollering, who's not won the race yet in her career. It's one of the sort of the larger gaps on her palmarès. She's been second. I mean, I think it's a race between her and maybe Lorena Vivas.
Her former team, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the big, you know, that's the big drama. That's the big juicy story, isn't it? It's Demi Vollering against the team she's just left, with whom she had quite a bit of a fallout. Let's be honest, it was quite public, and she's come out and she gave a great interview to Adam Blythe actually the other week on one of our shows, talking about her plans for the season. And she was very, very excited. But that's just displaying that real sort of, it's a big Dutch trait, isn't it, when there's confidence speaking, and there's not, it can be interpreted in different ways if you don't know the culture, but it's very confident. It is, I want to do this, I'm good enough to do that. And she was there saying, yep, I want to win the Tour. This time I want the team with me. But she was talking about the classics as well. And she's a rider who can do just about anything anywhere. I mean, there's Balsamo who's going to be racing as well. Lidl always have a strong team. Unfortunately, Anna Henderson's not fit enough to race. I was really looking forward to see her. She, of course, has changed team, but she's not been too well. So she'll be in action the week after. But yeah, it's all about following Vibas, and I think FDJ up against following's former team.
Just to kind of echo the comment I made about Tom Pidcock and the lighter riders being at a slight disadvantage on this kind of course, I hope it's not the case. I'd like to see Kasia Nieuwendomme win, purely because my old magazine days, sub-editing days, I would love the opportunity to do the headline Omloop Nieuwendomme instead of Omloop Nieuwsblad. And on that No, Rob, we should probably leave it there.
We should, but do you know what? I'm just looking around. I think there's people doing winter training for the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad where we are sat. I've just looked, and there's, you know, the ice bath thing is a big, it's in at the minute, isn't it? There's people having ice baths right in the middle of London here. We're sat having a coffee. I'm looking around, and they've got these bob hats on, and they've just got out, and they're going to run over to, it must be a steam room or a shower to get warm, but maybe they're training for the Omloop Het Nieuwsblad in the -9 temperatures, eh?
Well, they better get a move on. Rob, thank you very much for joining me. We'll be back early next week with Daniel Freebert to recap the racing, not just Omloop Het Nieuwsblad or Omloop Nieuwsblad, as we're going to have to get used to calling it, but also Kerner Brussels Kerner, which is kind of the consolation or the do-over for some teams on the Sunday. Not quite as big a race, I don't think. Not quite as attractive a race to me, but it has some qualities that definitely make it watchable. One thing that reminds me of all of my trips over the years, going to Omloop on the Saturday and then Kerner on the Sunday, is that there's always this jazz band playing at the start, walking up and down where the team buses are parked. They're called De Coureurs, and I think we should play out with a little bit of their music just to whet the appetite for the weekend. Rob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week. Enjoy the racing.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.